Pop and everybody, hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
The co-hostiest with the co-mostiest.
Wow, look at you. Wait a second. I liked
Those
it so
rhymed.
Much that I like sort of, I sort of rolled with it. I was
what?
Like, look at you go, thinking of clever things to say.
Exactly, yes.
Here's the real thing, I think, about this defining idea of me being the host and you being the special guest.
Oh, you just said it!
I know, I almost stepped right into a puddle of tears.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, in true form, like if you were on like a talk show, the host of the show is not really... Depending on how you look at it, like Jimmy Fallon is the host of the show, but he has a guest, and the guest is what the whole episode is about. So like in proper form, every episode of Popcorn Culture should be about you.
Well,
my special guest.
You say that. There's like normally three guests per episode of the Tonight Show. And
I do like to think that you bring out three different distinct personalities every single episode.
You think you have to, but you don't introduce me three times.
No. Well, of course not. Yeah.
I mean, I don't do like a musical presentation or like do like a, hey, here's the opening bit. Here's this brand new up and coming comedian. He's going to do 5 minutes on the Tonight Show. It's going to be great.
Everyone
I just think that you give a big round of applause for Jonathan Carlin.
What would be all of your different personas that you deliver? You've got the older brother persona for sure, like much more responsible, you know, like Ben always does these ridiculous things, his antics.
We
all know what they are and when they happen. We all like nudge shoulders and we're like, look, he's doing it again.
There he goes.
So that's older brother Jay.
Uh-huh.
And of course we've got like Super Carlin Brothers co-host,
right?
Jay, which is like our business relationship, you know,
right,
like we work together.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a friend from work.
Yes!
And then we've got Giggles Jay.
And then Giggles?
Everybody likes
Those
Giggles
Those are my three
Jay.
Personalities?
Yeah.
Older brother.
Work associate.
Giggles.
Like, very... I mean, look at you right now. You got the giggles that's happening.
Oh, boy.
We got Giggles on stage, folks.
That's right. That's me. That's Giggles Carlin over here.
On camera two.
On camera, yeah.
Give him that sparkling smile.
Mm-hmm.
Zing! Oh, man.
I'm sure you guys could hear that smile from wherever you're sitting.
Of course they did.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the smile heard around the world. People in their cars or walking their dogs or like loading the dishwasher, whatever people do whilst listening, like several days ago, they were like, I feel like I just heard a smile.
I think you'll have to let us know, little kernels, but I'm imagining certainly some people are listening in their car. And they just heard the smile. Now, look, did you also notice the person in the car next to you look over when you heard the smile? Because that was them hearing that.
The same thing.
Exactly.
Wow.
And the thing is, though, people are going to listen to this at different times. So this smile is going to be heard around the world, like, a lot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Man. It really makes it cooler when you think of it like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Your smile is just radiating through ear waves the world over.
Exactly. Most people think of smiles as like a visual medium. Not on this podcast.
Not on this podcast. You can hear us when we smile.
Exactly.
When Jay Giggles Carlin steps up to the plate to deliver that shining smile.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Okay. So I feel like stepping into this week's episode, I had like a lot of stuff that I wanted to talk to you about.
Okay.
And actually one of them happened to me last week and I debated on bringing it up in after the final pop, which is like the Patreon exclusive,
right?
Like bonus bit.
Yeah.
And I decided that I was like, no, I'm going to wait and I'm going to deliver it. Popcast main. So I've been holding on to the story. I've been wanting to tell you like all week.
Oh,
I actually feel like I've been like hesitant to tell anyone. This is like,
cause you do this sometimes when we do the movie reviews.
That's exactly what I was
going
to say.
It's such a weird experience because back when movies were a thing,
we would
like, you know, it's like a big event at the Super Carlin Brothers office. Cause it's like, okay, like this is a new thing that we're all going to talk about.
Yes.
And we want everyone's opinion and we want everyone to be informed. So we'll like all go as a group and people bring like significant others. And you know,
it's an occasion.
It's an occasion. Yeah.
Like everybody's allowed to get like as much snacks and drinks as they please.
Right. You know, we talk about movies. Movies are a big deal. So we'll go. But then the point, of course, is so that everyone sees it so that we can discuss it. However, you and me in particular will do the review the next day on camera. So we'll come out and everyone will sort of just be like, it's like you have to like trade thoughts about the movie without giving away at all how you felt about anything.
Exactly.
And you in particular are very much like on the extreme end of just like, I'll just stare at the ground and pretend I don't have emotions.
It's really weird for me because I think being someone who very much is an extrovert, very much likes being social, it's really hard because I'm usually like stewing with thoughts. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I know that the first time I deliver a thought process, it tends to be the most like succinct version of it.
Right.
And then typically what I'm trying to do in the future is then like recapture that lightning in a bottle.
Right.
Where it's like, I said it so good the first time. Like, and a lot of times I will like, it will come out so organically and naturally that when you try to recreate it, you're trying, it's like the hardest thing in the world to do. It's not like a prepared bit. It's not rehearsed or anything like that. It's just when your thoughts come out of you
the first time
in one good go.
It's always better live.
It's always better live.
You know, that's what I learned from Harlem Globetrotter Buckets Blakes once upon a time.
Tell me about that.
Well, I will, Ben. So part of my old job was that every now and then, like to promote an upcoming show at the venue.
Hold on. His name was Buckets Blakes.
Yep. Well, all the Globetrotters have really fun names like that.
But that's his real name, as
I assume his real name is Buckets Blakes.
Blakes, plural.
Buckets. I'm pretty sure it was Buckets Blakes. I think it was plural. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it was Buckets Blake. Maybe. I don't know. Buckets Blake. Buckets, anyway. So the shows would often send like an advance ambassador, and this person's whole job with the show is to be like 2 weeks ahead of the show to arrive in the city and to like do a little press tour and like promote it coming up. So
go and be like on the morning shows and like spin the ball on your finger and stuff like that.
Exactly. So part of my job was scheduling said press tour.
Okay.
And you know, they'd be like, hey, we're sending it. Boy, the most consistent show that did this was the Globetrotters.
Okay.
And year after year, they would send Buckets ahead of time. So, you know, once a year, I would have to go pick him up from his hotel at like 4 a.m. because, you know, one of the news outlets was like, yeah, we got to go. Let's go. And then I would drive him around to the radio station. The TV stations wouldn't be everywhere. We'd go get chicken and waffles somewhere. Not somewhere. We'd go to Thelma's because there weren't that many breakfast places open in downtown Roanoke.
Sure.
It was always the same place.
Dude, Thelma's Chicken and Waffles was like my spot for a solid 2 years of my life.
It was so good.
It was so good.
It's completely gone.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. Never to be had again. The lone chicken and waffles place in Roanoke that I'm aware of. But anyway, the first stop was always the 4 a.m. like morning news segment where you'd have like 3 or 4 times where they would cut away to the live reporter. And, you know, we'd always have to like book a gymnasium as well.
Oh,
so that
right,
he could,
okay,
you know, do stuff because it was like a basketball thing.
Right, yeah, of course.
And he'd be sitting there, and in between like segments, he'd just be sitting, you know, warming up or shooting baskets or something. And they'd be like, "All right, what are you going to try?" And be like, "I think I'm gonna try and hit a half court shot when you come back." And you're like, "Well, that's great, but you're only going to have one shot at it. Like, are you going to make it?" Like, which is like, you know, the Globetrotters' whole shtick is like, "Yes, they're going to make it.
Right,
they're
going to
stand in the stands and they're going to huck a ball live in front of everyone and they're going to make it in the hoop." And you're going to be like, "How'd you do that?" And so he'd be sitting there and they'd shoot, you know, he'd shoot 2 or 3 and like none would go in. And you'd be like, "Do you want to keep going till you make one?" And be like, "Nah, I'll get it once the camera's on. It's always better live." And he'd be like, okay. But sure enough, as soon as the camera was on, they'd be like, "Let's head over. Buckets, what are you going to do?" He's like, "I'm going to hit this right here." And he'd nail it every time.
What?
Like beyond half court most of the time too. And he'd be like, "Dude, that was awesome. That was cool.
It's so, always better live.
Always better live." So,
man. Okay. And I've heard you talk this like phrase before. So it used to be the case when we were really big into rock climbing that when you're working on a problem, a route, that's usually called projecting. And so you're like projecting like your thing.
Yeah.
And I remember very early on, there was this unbelievably cool, like a huge shout out to River Rock Rock Climbing in Roanoke, Virginia, because they put up really fun things for you to climb and they change them a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's just a very well-managed gym. But very early, the first V3 I ever did, which is like as you're going up in difficulty, there's what, like VB, V0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever, and so on. This had probably been like a month of climbing in, 2 months of climbing, and I was going and trying to do this V3, and it was like you would literally run up to the wall, and they had these like two big rocks mounted like at ankle level. Do you remember this problem?
I do. Yeah, were like the tiki face rocks.
Yeah. They were like little faces, and so you would have to like step, and then jump through the air and literally grab these two almost like angled grips. And it was like that was the crux of the problem. That's like what made it really cool. Mm-hmm. Was like step, jump, grab, and then you're like sort of like swinging out in open air. And I remember I was like working on it for, I mean, I don't know, 30, 40 attempts or something like that.
Yeah.
And what I really wanted, because I could make the grab, I just couldn't quite finish the rest of the problem. I was like, this would be a cool Instagram post either way, just like me catching it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, Jay, just record it for me so that like, I'll just make it look cool and people won't know that I technically didn't finish it.
Right. If you do the run, stair, step, jump, that just looks impressive.
It just looks impressive. Yeah.
Weirdly, so, was not the hard part.
Exactly. In the end. Right. I guess the last finishing move is what really made it the trick there. But I remember you like started filming and it was like, all right, boom, grabbed it, like swinging through the air, threw my foot up, and it was just like, bam, done. Like I did it. And it was like, what?
Did the whole thing.
Like, I came up and I got it on camera. Like, the first time I ever climbed a V3 and got it. It's on my Instagram somewhere, I think. So if anybody wants to, like, really dig through and find that video, it does exist out there.
There it is.
But, yeah, so it's always better live.
Always better live, man. And it's always better live.
You said that day.
I said that day. Yeah.
I think it might even be in the video, you saying, it's always better live. Like sort of like in the funny. Background.
That's funny. I think it's possible there exists a photo of me in buckets over on the Instagram as well. I know it's on my Facebook somewhere, but
maybe we'll
dig that up for the pop.
There you go.
For the Reddit or the Patreon or something.
That's perfect. Yeah. So anyway, the story that I wanted to tell last week though.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Which, how long did it take us? About 15 minutes to get there?
Yeah, we'll get. Yeah, that's fine.
We'll get there. I had this experience just recently where I legitimately tried to see the future.
Okay. I have many questions.
Yeah. This was, okay. So first thing was like, it never occurred to me that I had never really tried to see the future before. It was like, it's like one of those things where it's like, you kind of assume you can't do it, rightfully so.
Well, I'll just like hold a finger up here and we'll come back to it.
We'll come back to that finger.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was the thing though. It was like, when was the last time you ever legitimately attempted and like believed, like, what if I could? Like, what would I see if I really focused and like put energy and effort into this idea of seeing the future?
This is, I'm sure you'll understand this reference. This is like a name of the wind problem. This is like, focusing your ailer, basically, right?
Yeah,
exactly what it is. It's like, if I could just believe that when I jumped, I would fly, I feel certain I would.
Exactly.
But, it's impossible.
Right.
You can't bring yourself to believe it's not true.
It's such a laughable thing.
It's also, that's also not true. Don't, please don't try that.
Please don't try and fly. The situation that I'm in, let me paint you the, because there was a rather specific set of circumstances that I think allowed for this to happen.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. How did you go about trying to legit see the future?
Okay. Well, it all started with mirrors.
Okay.
I know. Right. So if you stare hard enough into a mirror. No, I'm kidding. That's not what it was. But it was mirrors. So my wife owns a bridal shop. And there was a local bridal shop that had gone out of business a few years back. And the woman who had owned it, they were like, you know, they know each other from both being in the industry and the local area and all that. So cross paths. And she had sold the building and she was just wanting to move the last major bits of stuff out of that previous building. And it was stuff that Alice could use because a lot of it's like big unwieldy stuff that you wouldn't just go to the store and buy.
Mm-hmm.
One of those things was extremely large mirrors.
Ugh.
And so she was like, hey, could you come by? So I've actually got these suction cups that I use for moving aquariums.
Yeah.
They're like these really super industrious. They can each hold like 200 pounds a piece, but they will like suction onto a perfectly like flat surface. And then you can like carry stuff.
That's how you were carrying the mirror with multiple suction cups. That frightens me just you saying it.
It was very, very nerve-wracking.
To me, it seems like, I know the suction cups you're talking about, and it seems to me that you could like suction them down hard enough that they would just pull the glass away from itself.
Ooh, what an interesting thought.
And like fracture beneath the cup.
I am so glad I didn't think about that.
It also seems to me that if you had multiple, you could easily like warp the glass as you were.
Well, so what walking. I would do.
And let me tell you, Ben, if I have one phobia in life, it is broken glass.
Really?
It is not for me. It makes me like shake. And this I could not have helped you with this task.
Interesting. Yeah. I did not know that. Oh, I did not know that at all.
Yeah. It's like suddenly developed somewhere in like my adult life. Like, I don't think like, but man, it just freaks me out. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, yeah. So it's kind of fascinating for a couple of reasons. One, these are like commercial grade mirrors. They're like very big, very thick. They're made and they're very heavy.
Yeah.
As a result too. So, there was a part of me that had like some concerns over just moving such a large thing, but it ultimately ended up being fine, but I was also reassured because several years ago we were making an ad for a Super Carlin Brothers video for a Dollar Shave Club promotion.
Yeah.
I think is what it was. And I was like, especially so early on, this was like one of these things where I was like, I had such old school like business thinking where I was like, dude, whenever we get brand deals, like we are going to go so far above and beyond. We're going to have like a reputation that like, if you work with us, then mm-hmm. we deliver like the most action packed over the top product ever. And we're going to like people will see us at conferences and be like, oh yeah, those guys, like that's their thing. Like they're really good at that. And I think it was just like, more than anything, I think I was really, really excited to get a brand deal. Cause that's like a huge milestone early on in like just your YouTube career.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
Like what? I'm going to get, wow, really? You want me?
Right. And yeah. It was Dollar Shave Club, which was a company that like, I remember when they first released this, it was like a very satirical like advertisement for their company where like you had this guy walking through the warehouse and he was like, buy our razors. Are they good? Nope. But they're cheap. And like, that was like the whole thing. And I was like, I'm in. Like, yeah. I love the fact that you addressed that your product isn't perfect, but it was like, there was like some other benefit to working with them. And so when they reached out, I was really excited. And so we had our drone at the time and I was like, okay, it snowed last night and we're right next to a river. So like, I want to do this like ultra cinematic, like, you know, 4K widescreen, like sweeping shot of like the snow banks and slow motion and everything. And then you're going to like walk up to me on the edge of the river in like flannel and a beanie. And I'm going to be like shaving with a broken shard of mirror, like underneath a bridge. And it's just supposed to be like cool and rustic. Well, and
shaving
like,
with the razor. Looking in a broken mirror.
That's the one.
Not rubbing the broken glass not, on your
yeah,
face.
Yeah. No, yeah. No. Okay. But for extreme clarity, yeah, we'll make that known. So anyway, like I had the mirror idea in my head so early on, like it would be like so rustic to have this piece of scrap of mirror or whatever. Yeah. And so I was like, man, well, where do I get a mirror? And I had literally, when I moved into my house, I had tried to kind of half-heartedly put a home gym in my basement. And so I literally just went and stole one of the mirror, not stole, it was mine. I literally just took it off of the wall in the basement and put it in the back of my truck. And I rolled it out there and I was like, okay, I'm just going to like literally break this mirror in my truck bed.
Yeah.
And so I remember like leaning it up against the wheel well and like I jumped on it and it did not break.
That is unbelievable.
I know. And word of warning, don't try to break mirrors just for, again, you know, safety.
Yeah. You'll create broken glass 100% if you break a mirror.
Yes. Yes. So anyway, I was like, I mean, I remember like being out there in like boots and my flannel and everything. And I was like, I did not expect breaking glass to be the difficult part of this day.
Right.
And I was also afraid if I like stepped on it too hard and it like popped, it could like conceivably cut me.
Oh yeah. I mean, what I'm imagining is there's like, of course you'll have the big pieces, which are a danger for actually slicing you. But then there's also, to me, like very, very tiny sharp pieces of glass that basically become dust and float up in the air and could get in your eyes.
All sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so finally though, I like give it like a hearty stomp and it's almost like a knowing strength kind of thing. I almost feel like it's like punching through a board. It's like you could punch a board and it would hurt your fist. And then you can punch with the intent of punching through the board and it will break. Mm-hmm. And it's like literally that like mental gymnastics of like knowing, again, almost like we're about to say, like being able to see the future. Like you have to literally believe your hand is going to go through it and then you will punch with the appropriate whatever. I have no idea how karate works. That's how I imagine it. So don't try to punch through boards.
I think when you're in karate, the boards you break are like specifically
like made for,
tailored for karate.
Karate. Yeah. Okay. Well,
I don't think they're just like going to Lowe's and being like, let me pick up a couple of 2x4s for my 8-year-olds.
I would
here.
Not have thought they were 2x4s.
That
I would have
also. Yeah.
I would have thought like maybe like 1-inch thick boards and of an appropriate length to where the structural integrity at the middle with the proper amount of force would snap.
Yeah. And I could be totally wrong. Maybe they are just regular non-tailored pieces of woods and or brick or whatever they're punching.
Someone will let us know.
Someone,
no doubt.
Someone definitely listening is a karate practitioner.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, though, so I'm in my truck bed stomping on this mirror. Finally, it breaks. And I'm like, I cannot believe how difficult it was to break this mirror.
Yeah.
And as fate would have it, I got food poisoning that night.
Did you really?
I literally did.
As per the superstition?
As per the superstition that you will have 7 years of bad luck, which I think I still have like 3 years left of, maybe four. So yeah, it's been a hard haul, but it was worth it for that $1 Shave Club commercial that did not get re-upped after the fact.
It was very impressively cinematic, if I recall.
I was really like strangely proud of it. Most of the videos that we do for Super Carlin Brothers, we are sitting in our chair.
Yeah.
So from like a visual storytelling standpoint, that's not really like the feat of our channel. So to me, this was cool because I thought I created something that like looked cool. And yeah. I was very proud of that, which was just funny to me that it happened to be a brand deal. But anyway, so all of that to say, I was reasonably assured that these mirrors weren't going to break, but they as much as I've talked about mirrors now, they played a very small role other than putting me in the right place at the right time to meet the woman who was selling the building whose new business prior was owning this bridal shop now runs a sensory deprivation tank company in Roanoke, Virginia.
Okay.
So we're there.
We're there.
I know. I want to start with mirrors because I felt like mirrors and seeing into the future.
I thought you were going to have some sort of like, if you line up enough mirrors, you can like see like around the corner of time or something.
Oh, I tried that too. It didn't work.
That didn't work.
While we're there, she's telling us about these sensory deprivation tanks, which I don't know if you've ever seen like Daredevil, the movie.
With Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner.
That's the one.
Oh yeah, for sure.
He like sleeps in like one of these tanks. They're like very high salt content. So like the Dead Sea is the same way. Like if you were like to go and run and jump in the Dead Sea, like you would float like immediately to the surface. Like you would, mm-hmm. you would be stuck on the surface of the water. And I think it's also in Stranger Things. There's a moment where they like put her into like a swimming pool in the middle of a gymnasium and all the salt's in there. So anyway, this company though, they've got these like sensory deprivation tanks. And when you go inside of it, the whole idea is it's supposed to be like a very meditative experience. And it was actually, she told us about it and I was like, well, I'm definitely going to sign up for that because that sounds so cool.
Yeah.
And I couldn't actually believe that there was something like that in Roanoke.
Right.
And turns out there was. And so Allie made an appointment and we went and we did it. And so while I'm like, I'm like in this space that was really cool, the whole thing, like, cause you get in and like, I like went to like lean back and I was like, literally I had no idea what to expect about how this experience was going to go. And it like immediately floated you. Like I thought that I was going to have to like, maybe like focus. Cause I can't float even in the ocean. Like, I think I'm just too bone dense or something like that. My legs always sink. So I was like, wow,
too much muscle.
Way too much muscle. Muscle sinks.
Exactly.
That's my excuse.
That is.
It's true.
That's the thing. Yeah.
Yes. But I guess it would be the real brag there would be suggesting that you have so much more muscle.
It does sound like, well, I'm too muscular to float, you know.
Exactly. There's actually a fantastic movie that I'm obsessed with that has Ashton Kutcher in it where he's learning to be a rescue swimmer. And there's a moment where they have to like tread water and like the big beefy guy who like bullied him about his bunk that morning is he can't tread water for an hour because he's got so much muscle and he starts cramping.
I see.
And that was when I learned that lesson. I was like, okay,
look at that guy.
Sucks to suck. Not really. But no, noble cause either way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still training to be a rescue diver.
So exactly. Yeah. But he got kicked out, man. That was it. Yeah. Cause he couldn't do it.
I see.
So then Ashton Kutcher got the bunk.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. They called him Fish. It was awesome.
They called him Fish.
Because he was a...
This isn't the same movie with Cuba Gooding Jr. becoming a rescue diver.
Is there two movies about becoming a rescue? There probably could be.
No. Well, I think there must be at least these two.
Okay, I think this had Kevin Costner in it. I do not think that it had Cuba Gooding Jr.
Kevin Costner, my least favorite act to ever come to my old place of employment. Did you guys know that Kevin Costner, the actor, has a country western band? Well, he does. And man, I had to promote that show once upon a time. And the promoter for that show was like the world's biggest Kevin Costner fan or something.
Oh my gosh. Like,
in their mind, every now and then you would come across promoters like this where like they were so like had such tunnel vision about the greatness of the show they were in charge of.
Yeah.
Like they could not fathom why it, like the only reason it wasn't selling was because it was your fault.
Right.
You know, it was like, here's the thing. People don't really care if Kevin, like this is, and if it had sold out, I would change my tune. But in general, it seemed like people did not really care that Kevin Costner had a band. You know, I think people maybe bought tickets because they're like, hey, I'll get to see that famous actor.
Right.
But
right.
I don't think most people are a fan of him in a musical way.
Right.
In not the same a fan way of the band. That they are.
But that's the thing too, though. I've always wondered this about political candidates, because I feel like that must be such a thing. Is you're going and you're putting on these rallies, and like everywhere you go there are like screaming fans who are so like, you know, holding signs with your names on it and stuff. Like it must become so easy to be like inundated with being surrounded all the time with people like screaming your name and being so excited for you and cheering at everything you say, mm-hmm. only to like ultimately lose,
mm-hmm.
and it just be like, but there were all those people. Like, I just spent the last so many months, like, everybody, like, thinking I was so smart and sharing everything I said. And now I lost? How is that possible?
Yeah.
I have to imagine that's what happens. Like, any like, reasonably close election or not, I bet everyone thinks they've got it in the bag.
It's hard to say, because they also have, like, constant polling numbers and stuff.
That's true.
Coming in and out.
That's true.
Which maybe are like preparing them one way or the other.
Well, and that, I think that's where spin comes into play.
Yeah.
It's always like, but you know, like people don't always call in the polls, or like, oh, you're ahead in the polls, but like, don't be too confident.
Yeah.
You know,
who knows?
Yeah. I don't know. I'll tell you one day when I ultimately run for political office. One day. We'll see.
Good luck.
Thanks.
I'll vote for you.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
That was Brother Jay.
Oh, that was me. That was older Brother Jay.
That was that person. That was it. Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks.
So anyway, I'm lying in this sensory deprivation tank, and there's all sorts of like, it takes a long time because you're incredibly self-aware if this is like your first time doing this particular thing, because you know that the objective is to try to have like really like deep thoughts, or just to like let your mind wander, or for it to be like relaxing. Me being who I am, I was like very like purpose driven with like my experience, was like, I need something to happen.
Sounds like the exact opposite of the approach you should be having.
Maybe. But so I'm in there, and like, I mean, it is like completely soundproof, completely pitch black. The temperature of the water is such that it like matches the temperature of the room and you. So you are neither like hot or cold.
And are you even aware that you laid down in it then? Or are you like, I'm laying down, when am I even touching the water?
Yes. I mean, that's sort of the thing, is that, yeah it's like the whole idea is to like really not even know where the water stops and the air
you
starts.
Begin.
Exactly. Oh, I know. Pretty
so
deep
it's
stuff.
Like, you may as well just be floating in space.
May as well be floating in space.
Right. No
I
sound.
Have to imagine that that's similar to how it is.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I actually did think about that while I was doing it. But every once in a while, I would like kind of like sideways float and touch the wall. And it would be like interesting how abrupt, when everything else has been taken away, if you like brush the wall like with your shoulder or something, you're like you're kind of rattled back to reality.
Right.
But the process of sort of like settling in and sort of like letting your brain calm down, because I was also very excited.
Yeah.
And so like, I think it was almost like I was expecting to like lay down and then like explosions of color or something start happening. Or I have no idea. Like I was like waiting. And of course it's like, it's entirely up to you and your brain to see what happens.
So I imagine also it's just absolute pitch darkness.
Absolute pitch darkness. Cannot see anything.
Gotcha.
And so like, as I'm like laying there though, it's almost like if you ever have like a floater go across your vision where there's like that like little, like whatever, and you like try to look at it and it sort of like keeps scooting just outside of your vision. I was having these moments where like, I was seeing like pops of color actually come up in front of like my either closed eyes or open. Actually, it gets very difficult to tell. Do you remember that from caving?
I do remember that from caving, because we went camping inside of a cave once, and similar It's definitely cold. Well, it's like always like 58 degrees or something.
There's like a steady like underground temperature.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, yeah, we went cave camping one time and the darkness is absolute. There is no light whatsoever once you are underground.
Yes.
And I remember at one point, like it is so dark to the point where you can be unaware as to whether or not your eyes are open or closed. And I know because I was laying there and we were all just talking and all of a sudden, like
you responded to something.
I responded to something someone said and everyone's reaction all of a sudden was like, "Oh, John, you're awake." And I was like, "I've been listening to this entire story. I've been awake the whole time."
Right.
And everyone roared in laughter at that because yes. Apparently I'd been snoring for like 10 minutes or something.
Yeah.
And it was like, "Oh, wow, that was like, obviously I was asleep and I had no idea." But right. It was like, that's how it's hard to describe that kind of darkness.
It is. And that was the funniest thing in the world. It was like, you were so adamant that you were not asleep. And it was like, yes, 1000% you were.
Yeah.
It was really funny. But yeah, so same exact thing. So like, I'm sort of like laying there, eyes can't really tell if they're open, closed, whatever. And you're staring sort of just into the void. But like, that would mean that every time something sort of came across my vision, it was like, well, I'm seeing something. So like, let me try to focus on whatever that is. And so it really honestly went down like a variety of different, like very weird, trippy pathways.
Oh, it sounds like it.
Where it was kind of like, I don't know, like you'd be like looking at something and then all of a sudden, and of course this is probably my imagination basically being able to like build out what I was wanting to see because there was nothing there to like disturb just visualized imagination. So at first I felt like what I was literally seeing were like the neurons of my brain like connected.
Oh.
Where it was almost like, oh my God, I'm looking at the inner workings right now.
Eyes have turned around.
They've turned around. They're like seeing like, instead of like, because when you look around, you know, it's like, are you really just taking in like infinite amounts of data that is then like constructing what your vision is seeing? And it was almost like, okay. So if you're not seeing anything, maybe you can see like the workshop back there, you know, all the computers, everything, like the desk itself. I actually tried to organize my brain desk.
Oh, wow.
This was another thing that happened during this experience. So
interesting.
If you ever watch the Super Carlo Brothers channel and the Jay versus Ben shows, you know that I frequently have this vision of a very unorganized desk where all of the information that I know is stored.
Yeah.
And it was like, I tried to like walk into that room several times and like clean it up.
Yeah.
And it was so funny how quickly it was like, I would like pick up a piece of paper about anything and then my brain would just shoot straight down a thought about that for 5 minutes.
Oh man.
And it was like, yeah,
it sounds like a really fascinating experience.
It was. But basically after I stopped seeing my own neurons of my brain working, I started to, that was sort of like, what, and that's like when the thought started to occur to me. It's like, what if you actually tried to see the future? Like what if I just literally attempt to like just glimpse forward? And I feel like it sounds so ridiculous now, like saying it out loud. I've been so excited to tell you this story.
I can tell this is like where the mind wanders when like completely free. Like,
yeah.
What feels possible.
Right. And you're like extremely uninhibited by like anything, but in a really clear way. So like, you know, I think that, like, it, obviously through like drinking alcohol or something like that, you know, you would have like your inhibition sort of like lowered and it might like change your behavior.
Yeah.
But this was like crystal clear thinking, but nothing really like boxing it in at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it was just really interesting. And I would say that this was probably, it was a 75 minute float total. And I probably spent 20 minutes doing this very thing. And that was absolutely the period of time where I was like, I had like left the space, you know, like where
I'm going to chime in and say that I bet you have no idea how long you were.
Oh, spent.
You know, it could have felt like 20 minutes. It could have been like 30 seconds.
Could have been
stretched. Because the other thing I learned from our caving camping is that pure darkness like this, especially if you were also purposely, depriving yourself of other senses,
yeah,
is that the passage of time becomes extremely difficult.
Yes.
Which is maybe why you could see in the future.
Maybe. Yeah. Exactly, because time stood still. Or it was flying, yeah.
What is time?
What? But you know, you're absolutely right, because yeah, 75 minutes, and it was totally one of these things where like enough time had passed where I was like, they forgot to tell me to leave. Like I'm going to like pop out and have been in here for like half the day, and they're going to be like, yeah, we're gonna have to charge you for like six sessions. And like,
like, no, you forgot to get me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So sure enough, the timer went off, and like a very soft, gentle voice came on and said like, your float is now over. And it was like, ooh, okay. Okay. But yeah, so that was my very unusual, but like fascinating experience with just total sensory deprivation.
Yeah, but wait. So wait, did you see the future? How did it go?
I don't think I saw it.
What did you see?
I don't even know how to describe it.
Oh,
like,
boy.
I don't think I could, because it felt so absurdly abstract and weird, and I think maybe a little Matrix-y.
Oh boy.
Where it felt a little bit. Felt weird. Too much conspiracy theory. Also, I totally had this thing happen just here recently. I don't know if I've talked about this or not. I follow an Instagram account called Jerry News. Do you follow this?
No.
Okay. It just seems to be like a rather, I would say for the most part, it feels like no nonsense type of news reporting. I'm sure there are people out there who are like, no nonsense, are you kidding me? But it feels like it always keeps me up to date with like whatever might be like a top story,
yeah,
you know, something big happened. But there was this thing that happened very recently where they posted something where I guess there was like some Canadian physicist or something or another determined that there was like a 50% chance that like we live in a simulation.
Oh.
And the whole idea is that like it's more like it's 50% because you can't prove that we don't.
Yeah, does that constitute 50%?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. But so the news source reported like 50% chance that like we live in a simulation. And I was like, this is typically like a news source that like I actually consume.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, that is interesting. And it was probably one of those things where I was giving it way more credit than I would if I was like reading a blog post and got to the bottom and there's all those clickbait articles like,
yeah,
10 actors you didn't know were dead. And it's like, you know, it's like, I'm not interested. You know, usually it's like, yeah, I don't know, whatever. But so I remember I was like seeing this post and being like, huh, that's interesting. And I liked it. Like I liked the post.
Oh boy.
And it proceeded to, I could not believe the number of my friends who brought it up with me because they were like, hey, I saw you liked that post about living in a simulation. And I was like,
I can't believe you saw that I liked it.
I know. I was like, I never like things. Like, I can't believe you even paid attention to it. And they were like, you never liked, and you liked that?
Yeah.
Like, that makes it
that
worse.
That makes it worse.
And I was
or
like,
better.
Oh, man. Like, ended up being this whole thing where I could
maybe
do no right.
Maybe the simulation was like, he's onto us.
I know, exactly.
Get
but like,
him off
maybe
that
that's part of like what makes the simulation interesting.
Yeah.
Is like, you know, hey, we're watching this guy. And he's slowly figuring it out, but like not quite fast enough. It'll be way more interesting to watch him like.
The thing is, if you're like in a Matrix type situation or simulation, then you're just all, then we're all just in like sensory deprivation tanks somewhere.
Well, okay. So that's exactly what I was
right?
seeing with my attempt to see time travel was I was imagining. So like, you know, in the Matrix, they're like all in these like pods,
yeah,
and they're like hooked up to stuff and
like
whatever.
Batteries and stuff. Yeah,
exactly. So I think that was literally like where my brain went was like, okay, go to the source pod. Like, wake up. Open your eyes.
Oh,
just
wow.
Wake up.
So you really like spent time thinking, like trying to connect with a alternate reality of yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
I know. It was really, really weird.
That is really weird.
The whole experience was very odd, but it was also fascinating to me. Like, I just thought it was interesting. Like, I think stepping away from it is like tickling to me just that's what my brain did.
Like, yeah.
That's
like,
how it used
that
time.
You didn't know where it was going to go.
Exactly.
And that's what happened.
And yeah. So, yeah, like I got in there and I was wanting these like bursts of colors or fireworks or like, I don't know, to solve some type of like problem that's been weighing on me in my life every day or something. And this is what I got.
This is what you got. This is what you got. Well, did you, I mean, It's very much making me want to go try it. I've always wanted to try something like this, and now hearing your experience makes me curious where my mind would wander.
I know. I think you should do it, because then we could like circle back and hear about your experiences with it and like what you discovered.
I will definitely sign up, and I'll have to report back. Okay. Now, let me just say though, like in terms, it's interesting like that predicting or seeing the future was like a thing you were attempting, because of like the available superpowers, you know, that you might think of, like predicting the future is one that we are already like maybe not seeing the future in like a superpower magic sci-fi sense of the word, but like predicting the future is something humans are pretty good at. Like if you are unable to, like, you know,
by using data,
by using like just your own experience.
Oh, sure.
Data or something like that. Like,
right.
You know, like if I held a ball out here and let go, you can very easily predict what's going
to
happen.
It's going to fall to the floor.
It's going to fall to the floor.
Right.
And like, that is a form of predicting the future. And like, when you watch the weather every day, it's like, that's all they're doing is trying to predict the future.
Right.
You know, and with fair accuracy.
Right.
Well, I woke up to snow this morning. I didn't know that was going to happen, but.
Right.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have known if I didn't talk to dad on the phone yesterday, who had talked to his dad who lives in New York and called our dad to say, hey, you got snow coming tonight. Because he likes to check our weather, which I think is just the sweetest thing ever. but I think that maybe the difference was with this particular situation is that it wasn't that I was like trying to predict the future. What I was literally attempting to do was see the future.
Mm-hmm.
Like I thought like maybe if you tried hard enough, you could like see something, and it would almost be like you would still have to have the added layer of, because there's like, you could have dreams all the time, which are experiences that maybe you didn't have,
mm-hmm.
that you can like concoct an entire vision of.
Yeah.
But that's not the same as like seeing the future. It's just your brain's ability to tell you a story when you're asleep.
Yeah.
And this would almost be like trying to navigate something like that, like see something and then also have enough trust in what just happened to believe that what you didn't just see was like a daydream and what you saw was in fact the future itself.
So people experience deja vu every now and then.
Sure.
Right. But
glitch in the matrix,
as it were. But it's to me, the explanation for deja vu is always so interesting, because when it's like the act of experiencing it is like you remembering that you saw this future like in a dream or something.
Okay.
Like if you were to...
That's the explanation for deja vu?
No.
Okay,
That's like what the experience is like.
Sure.
Like whenever, if I ever experience deja vu, it like feels like something will happen and I'll be like, and I'll like, my brain will suddenly remember having already seen that happening.
Right.
But like only in the moment am I capable of remembering that I saw it. It wasn't like, at some point I'm going to see someone like close that door in just this way.
Right.
But like
what's
really happening... It's almost as if your brain like is filing the same memory twice, but once was like last Monday in your Google history browser, but you're filing it there even though it didn't happen there.
Oh, sure.
And all
sure.
of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I thought about it then. But it's like, no, you didn't. You're just thinking about it twice right now. And you're like, you like filed a memory. You filed the present as a memory and now you're remembering it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Something like that.
No,
I think
that's
how deja vu works.
Well,
Or it's a simulation.
I know. Well, I think I just get fascinated. Maybe at some point in my life I'll have to like write a book or something like with this idea in mind. But mostly what I tend to think about when I think about the potential for something like this would almost be like if you were watching like a person in a completely black room where there is a doorknob somewhere that will like allow them to exit the room,
mm-hmm.
and you can see with like night vision everything that they're doing, but they're legitimately like wandering around the dark. So there'd be like these moments where you could like watch them get like within inches of the door and then walk completely in the wrong direction. It's like they were like, you know, like something that they don't know, which
right.
is they were so close to it.
Mm.
Like they like almost brushed it. They almost touched it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's interesting to me about this whole thought process, like in a vacuum, I guess, would be like if someone's watching and like what, like if they were watching me in that moment, is there the potential that they were like, dude, he is right at the door right now.
Yeah.
He is so close.
Mm-hmm.
All he has to do is like move slightly to the side.
Right.
And he would touch the doorknob. And it would be like, whoa!
That, Who knows?
Who knows?
It seems like more people would find it. Because, like, you're imagining yourself alone in this room in the dark fumbling. But certainly everyone on Earth would be alone, would be fumbling through the same void.
Unless the whole... I mean,
or is everyone, like, individually in their own void?
Potentially.
Well, I don't know. It still seems like someone would stumble upon it eventually.
It does feel like it, except for the idea that I think in my analogy, you're in a tactile room with a tactile doorknob, which is something that, like, we understand.
Yeah.
And maybe opening this doorknob goes a bit beyond our fundamental understandings of how to exit a room.
Man, you're getting real deep on today's
topic. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
We can transition really hard into soulmates if you'd like.
Oh man, you know what? Before we do that, we should tell people that we can talk about soulmates. That sounds like fun.
Okay.
But we should tell people about an offer we are running over at Carlin Brothers Coffee. Right now, it is a coffee discount code. It's just by December 11th, BYDEC11. If you just use that code at checkout, by December 11th, you will get 11% off your entire Carlin Brothers coffee order and shipping in the U.S. And it will ship. That's the last day to order before to make sure it ships by Christmas.
Yeah, I actually love this promotion because it's like it's so clever and a reminder in itself. It's like by December 11th, you get 11% off and you'll make it by Christmas.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the code is the reminder by December 11th.
And the discount.
And you get 11% off. So there you go. That's a special code just for our listeners here on The Pop. If you want Carlin Brothers coffee, head over to carlinbrotherscoffee.com. Use promo code BYDEC11 by December 11th to get 11% off.
There you go. Nailed it.
All right, soulmates.
Soulmates. Okay. So yeah, switching back into like a different kind of philosophical wondering.
Mm-hmm.
I feel perfectly fine talking about this, but it was a bit of a tiff with Alice and I over the past weekend because we had
we had
like kind of a big conversation about this, like where it came up and it was so interesting the number of different ways in which how each person, if different from one another, might interpret this information, and then how many different ways that interpretation can then be taken.
Okay,
if you follow that. So we were having a conversation, and I think it was like literally just like we were like eating dinner, and I forget what had happened. It was something super, super small. But it sparked this thought in my mind, and we started talking about soulmates, and basically right off the cuff was the idea that I was like, no, I don't think I really like believe in soulmates. And Allie was like, I think I do believe in soulmates.
Oh,
and it was like, it was very interesting because right out of that gate, you had this situation where from Allie's perspective, it's like if she believes in soulmates, but the person that she's married to doesn't, then like, could your soulmate still be someone who doesn't believe in soulmates?
Seems almost definitionally yes.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
You're already together.
We're already together. Yeah. I know. So that was like this whole thing though. But then, so she sort of posed that question back at me. And then, so my reaction to it was like, well, I don't believe in soulmates, but now someone who does believe in soulmates, who I am married to, is questioning whether or not I am her soulmate. And even though I don't believe in soulmates, now I'm kind of worried.
No, like, it doesn't sound like she would be questioning it. Like, just because you don't believe in soulmates, she would question it, that you were her soulmate?
Yeah, well, so I think that's the thing. It's like, could soulmates have differing opinions on soulmates?
Oh, for sure.
Okay, so I mean, that's reassuring. That's good to know.
That's my immediate take on it.
Okay. Yeah. But so that was this, like...
Not to bring it back to the Matrix, which is just, you know, great. This is actually The Matrix Reloaded. But I always think about this one particular line from Morpheus, I think, in The Matrix Reloaded, where he's like, in Zion, talking to some council of real humans, and they're trying to decide what to do about the invading machines or whatever, and they're like, freaking Morpheus, not everyone believes the same things you do, and he's like, my beliefs do not require them to. And I'm always like, oh, that's like the best line. I think about that all the time. It sticks with me. And I'm like, yeah, exactly. Your beliefs do not require them to. And it's like, that's exactly what's happening here. It's like, you don't believe in soulmates, Ben? That doesn't matter. Alice's beliefs don't require you to.
Right. Okay. I love that. That was so good.
Yeah.
Wow, way to bring it full circle.
Yeah, you know, I try. This is like when I do not like dipping into like religion or politics or anything in here. But when like if you're like if whatever religion you are, whatever you believe is the end game of your religion, like for you know Christianity or whatever, let's say Jesus returns, right?
Yeah, right.
If like if that's what you believe. Like, that's what's going to happen. Then when it happens, it will not matter whether or not people believed in it the whole time.
Oh, right.
It's happening.
It's happening.
It's happening.
Yes.
Like, it's not going to be like, no, I didn't. I don't believe this. It's like, well, it's happening. Here he is.
There's not going to be a big told you so fest.
Yeah, there's not going to be a big told you so fest. Like,
right.
Exactly. Like, you're like, so whether or not you think it's happening, if it happens, it didn't require you to believe it for it to happen.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Anyway,
yes.
There you go.
That's very interesting. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so we had this whole conversation about it. I just thought it was interesting because my take on it was, and I think this is like where I may have like romanticized the thought of soulmates a little bit because it, in my mind, like Allie and I both grew up in Roanoke, Virginia.
Yeah.
And so I think like it makes sense that we ultimately would have crossed paths in some capacity. Like statistically speaking, it wasn't that like complicated for that to ultimately happen, I think. But maybe. I mean, there are plenty of people who live in Roanoke who I've never met before. So
I would say, the idea of soulmates always sounds like very, it does sound very romantic. Like there's someone on earth, but like, yeah, realistically the person on earth who you're best suited to is probably someone with very similar life experience as you.
True.
And the way to have the most similar experience is to have grown up in a very similar area and way. And so it's no surprise to me that many soulmates would be from the same area.
Right, right. It's almost, when you put it like that, it's almost like the idea of like online shopping for clothes that fit you for the activity you're attempting to do. So like, you know, if I were to go to like a sporting goods website looking for like a mountain biking jersey, it would be like, okay, click activity, mountain bikes. Okay, click apparel. Click men's apparel.
Mm-hmm.
Click like mountain bike specific.
Yeah.
Click jerseys.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sort of like, is it fate that I ended up buying one that is specifically for that? Or does it just make sense because those were my categories?
Yeah, I think you're describing more of a funnel than necessarily.
Well, I mean, I think that the idea of the funnel would be the circumstances themselves that lead the two people to that catalyst moment.
Yeah. I think, yeah, yes, I agree. And I think when most people think about soulmates, what they're like, at least in my mind, the very romantic vision of it is that like back when you were both just thoughts and ether and being created and sent to earth or whatever.
Sure.
That you these two things were held right next to each other and thrown at complete random at the earth. And one of you landed in Nebraska and one of you was in India. And look at this.
I know.
Through the sheer power of love and chance, you have found your way back to each other.
And I think that's exactly it. I think that's like in my mind. And I think this is like movie's impact on me and maybe like a minimal amount of time spent really, truly debating the idea of soulmates.
Mm-hmm.
But it was much more of this idea where it would be like, no. It would need to be the case that I had traveled to the complete opposite side of the world and had gotten separated from my group by a chance situation, which led me to this place, you know, that I never should have been for any reason because it was never decided that I would go there. And then whilst there
is when you met the person.
Right. And it's like nothing. I made no decisions that were supposed to bring me to this moment.
I think you're right. This is exactly the effect of like romantic or like movies and romance on TV and stuff like that. Cause what you're describing is like everyone wants to like be part of this narrative and it's very comforting to feel like destiny's in control or something.
Right.
And that it's like such a unique, but it's like what you're describing. It's like, yeah, you know why you met someone on the one day you did something different is because you did something different.
Right.
And you broke your routine and exposed yourself to a different thing. It's like, it's not really that surprising.
Right.
You know, like when you break it down.
Right, yeah.
But also the narrative in your head, of course, is like very romantic. Like, wow, can you imagine if I had just like, if my coffee maker had not spilled, I would not have had to spend an extra 5 minutes. I would have made it to the bus. I wouldn't have had to take that cab and the cab wouldn't have broken down and I wouldn't have ended up on that street corner and like this girl trips over me and now we're married. It's like, what? Like, oh my God. It's like, yes, exactly. But even with you and Alice, who grew up in the exact same area, I bet you can make that narrative in your head.
You probably
could.
Even
though you were barreling toward each other your whole life, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Yeah. So, okay, then my question for you is, do you believe in soulmates?
Do I believe in soulmates? I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily do. I don't know. Being in a relationship is just like a lot of work sometimes, though, you know?
Oh, I know. Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think it takes a lot of effort from both people, especially over like the course of a lifetime if you're married.
Right.
Sorry, this is making it sound like, oh man, being married to Beth is a lot of work. It's not. I love being married to Beth and I love her with all of my heart.
Spectacular save.
If you're listening, I love you so much. But I will say this, that I often use this idea as like a springboard for like an unwritten book in my mind, is the idea of soulmates.
Okay.
Let me explain to you the narrative of my unwritten book, Ben.
Lay it on me.
Okay, so
we're in the Matrix.
We're in the Matrix. Basically, no. So in this scenario, the way I like to romanticize the situation is that you have like your main character and whoever their significant other is.
Okay.
And that it just so happens that these two people in the like, in my book, there's like a set number of universes, but it's like nearly infinite or whatever.
Okay.
So it just so happens that this is the only instance of these two people meeting across every universe.
I'm loving it so far.
Which is great, right? It's like unbelievable. And as such, their child is singular within the entire multiverse.
Ooh,
you see what I mean? See
even
what I'm
more
at?
Interesting.
Which makes them very special and unique. And the child is like the John Connor of the situation. Like, we need to make sure this happens.
Okay,
right. So that's the situation. But then over the course of the book, like you would talk to like, you know, the one like the person, the god character or whatever at the center, who like could tell the main character, like, you look, this is important because in every other instance of your existence, you are married to someone, like you ended up with someone else.
Okay.
And then this is where I think the book would be interesting, because our main character would know, like, throughout his own life, he would have met all the women he typically marries in all the other chances. So that would be, it'd be like, no, like 10% of the time you marry this woman who you dated in high school, and you'd be like, oh yeah, like, okay, interesting. It's like, 90% of the time it's this girl, actually. And you're like, oh wow. Like, which then would like either fill that person with doubt or about like, man, if I normally end up with them, maybe I should have been with them or something like that.
Right. Oh, that's really interesting.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this could be like a romantic comedy easily.
Right. Yeah. So this is my unwritten romantic comedy out there.
Loving it.
Right. Fun scenario.
I think it's very interesting.
Yeah. But so that's, you know, how I like to imagine like soulmates, I guess.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like that. So like literally in every other situation.
Right.
Huh.
Like you ended up with someone else, but not in this one.
Not in this one.
You ended up with your soulmate.
The singular.
Yeah.
Ooh, good title.
Yeah. Right.
No, I think that is endlessly fascinating, and I think that it kind of pairs nicely with this like thinking that I always have, like, which is that there is data being collected on like literally everything about your life. Like, if you were to ever review like anything, like, I spend more time thinking about socks than you do, and it could be like confirmed, like, oh, it turns out Ben spends way more time thinking about socks.
I'm curious to know if other people imagine like some sort of afterlife where you could review data endlessly about like yourself. Like,
do you do this?
I have imagined this sort of thing. Like, yeah, like, I remember I was watching The Good Place, where like part of the afterlife for them was that they could sit there and watch themselves back, like their whole life back.
Okay.
Or whatever. I'm always like, man, I really hope that's not part of it.
I know. Like, I know.
I've also imagined this, like, you're forced to immediately like rewatch everything that just happened or something.
Right.
Yeah. Who knows? Man, this is a really like metaphysical episode.
It really is. Maybe it's a good title for it. A very metaphysical episode of The Pop.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
How do people imagine the afterlife? Yeah.
Everybody's going to walk away from this episode just being mentally exhausted.
Probably. Like, ooh,
going, yeah, like you just that. Earned yourself a nap.
Yeah.
Go and lay down.
I think you did.
But no, it actually, it's really funny, because it's like, there are, I think I've thought the same thing before, though, that like you might be able to go back and review things. And there are like things that I know in my life that I handled poorly, or it would be like really cringy or difficult to like go back and like watch yourself make these like bad decisions.
Yeah.
But it would be really very interesting to me to see if it's not much more clear how like so many more future decisions were determined by like individual moments where it's like even if there was a way to be like, what was the most important moment of my life? Like, you know, if you and you could go back to it and it's like, there was this moment right here.
Yeah.
And it's like, it could be like a seemingly innocuous thing, or it could be like a, you know, that day you lost your career job or something. And it's like, of course, that makes sense. You know, it's like something really big.
Very big and pivotal.
Right. But then like, what if it was something small?
Yeah, I don't know.
And it was just like,
I feel like this is the question that often the show How I Met Your Mother was like trying. Like, I feel like the writers were fascinated by this idea.
I think you're right.
You know,
yeah.
They very often have scenarios where Ted's like one off left turn changes the course of his life. And he's like, or at least the Ted character is fixated on whether or not that would have changed the outcome.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah. Whether or not he found the yellow umbrella.
Right,
yeah.
I don't know. Who knows? Crazy.
Oh my gosh. Well, I think since we've covered such hard-hitting stuff,
yeah,
it seems like a really good time for a fun fact about coyotes.
Whew, let's hear it, Ben.
Oh my gosh. Actually, this one is maybe a fun fact about wolves as well.
Okay.
But there was sort of an interesting thing that happened in Africa as it pertains to this particular subject.
Yeah.
But there was a newly discovered African golden wolf, and it was previously confused with the Eurasian African jackals because they look extremely similar.
Okay.
And people just assumed that it was the same creature.
Yeah, people not getting too close.
Yeah. But they ended up doing genetic testing on it, and they found out that despite the fact that it looked almost exactly like a golden jackal, it was genetically closer in relation to wolves and coyotes.
Interesting.
And it was the, let's see here. It increased the overall biodiversity of the Canidae family from 35 living species to 36. And it was the first time something got added to this particular family in Africa in over 150 years.
Well, that's crazy.
I know. I was like, huh, man, loving coyotes has brought like so many new wonderful discoveries into my life.
Crazy. And to Africa.
And apparently. To Africa. I'm so excited for them.
How fun. I always wonder, like, you'll hear a lot of times about like an invasive species or something.
Yes.
Ending up like, you know, like lionfish, I think it's a good one right now.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Right, off the coast of the Florida Keys.
Spreading up the East Coast or whatever.
Yep.
It always seems to me that it is something like a bug or a tiny fish or like an algae or something that is the invasive species that comes in and takes over or whatever.
Like it's something highly prolific, but also small.
Yes, something small. It's never like, man, what would happen if like you just had I always wonder, what if in the course of transporting like 100 elephants or something in Nebraska, they just like, oh, that car just broke down and they're just in the wild now.
And they're just like elephants.
What if you just put elephants, like, what if you just put 300 elephants in Nebraska
and just like,
or wherever, you know? And she's like, and assuming they could survive,
right?
Like, and it wasn't just like, well, they just all died because they weren't used to that. Like, if they just immediately adapted and like could survive, it's like, huh, well, now there's elephants here.
Now we have, like, elephants.
How would that affect things?
The North American elephants.
Exactly. The North American elephants, whatever. It's never some like big, cunning creature that's like all of a sudden introduced in a new area.
Right. No, you're right. Well, and I think that's interesting. Like, isn't it the case, and correct me if I'm wrong, that like grass, like we have in our yards, is not native to North America?
Oh, I think so.
In any capacity.
Right.
And it's like been brought here, but now it's like,
Now it's everywhere. Yeah.
Which again, yeah, is a kind of a better example of something small and prolific.
Right.
Rather than
grass. Well, it's not very exciting. It's not like, although the great example of this, bringing it back to coyotes, is the wolves in Yellowstone National Park.
Which is fascinating.
Fascinating how, because if you're unfamiliar with the story, at one point there were wolves in Yellowstone.
Yes.
And then they were like, let's get rid of these things.
They're dangerous.
They're dangerous. Yeah. But the absence of them caused like other populations to explode, like the elk, I think is what it is.
Elk or some version of a deer.
Some version of a deer to explode, and that caused like extra grazing, and then it like deteriorated the river structure. And it's like the absence of the wolves is affecting the shape of the river, and like that kind of thing like blows my mind. I'm like, how is the existence of wolves affecting the way the river flows? Like, that is a real thing that happens, and I cannot believe it. So I think they reintroduced the wolves eventually, and
yeah, I think
in
that,
fact, it like, started fixing the problems.
Started fixing the problems.
It's unbelievable. So that's a case where they were part of the natural order. They were removed. Bad things happened, and then they were reintroduced. It's like, okay, back to balance. But what if you just put elephants in Yellowstone National Park? How does that affect things?
What's that got to do with the size of an elephant in Nebraska?
Exactly.
New catchphrase.
Doesn't have to be elephants. Could be like, I always feel like, in particular, if you had some sort of like primate or something that could just sort of like, just like a little bit more advanced squirrels, you know?
Oh, sure.
I feel like they could survive, probably not too bad.
Like more of a grazer type of thing.
Yeah, just like, just up in the trees.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's just like a pack, like if there was just a pack of just monkeys in Roanoke, just who knows?
I always thought that was interesting growing up, like that I always really enjoyed when I would go to the library in elementary school, getting out the, like, books about wildlife. Yeah. Like I would always be like, oh, a book on rhinos, like I'm gonna go read about those.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always like, man, no interesting animals live in the United States
except for coyotes.
Let's be real. But
like I wonder if that is true, or if other places they just don't seem as interesting because they're here.
Right. Like, yeah, like if you live in Africa, you're like
wolves and buffaloes and stuff, that's so cool,
right?
Yeah,
but that's the other thing about, I guess, typically living in such a country that is so large in size, is that like, yeah, like buffaloes, for example, it's like, we don't have buffaloes here.
Yeah.
Like where we live.
Right.
So yeah, like, yes, they are something that a huge portion of the United States is like notably connected to.
Yeah.
Like based on like their origins and everything. And they might be like on your coins or, you know, t-shirts, flags, whatever the case may be. But yeah, it's like, we don't have buffaloes here.
Yeah. Zero chance of seeing a buffalo where we live.
Right. Unless you go to like a petting zoo where you like drive through with like a bucket full of feed. And they come over and stick their head in the car.
Right. Yes. That also blows my mind sometimes when I'm like, I know there is such a place nearby where you can like just roll through and like, you know, feed giraffes. And it's like within like 50 miles of us, there's a giraffe. You know what I mean? It's like, that's weird. That always, it makes me think of like a zombie apocalypse type situation where you're just like out roaming and you're like, was that a giraffe?
That was a
giraffe. Something happened. The giraffes are out. They're just grow. That's how you get North American giraffes.
The Virginian giraffe.
Exactly.
One of my all-time favorite creatures.
Because the truth of the matter is, within 50 miles of us, there is a giraffe.
Yes. Okay. So I used to think about this. This was like, as a kid, I had this like bizarre spiritual connection. Not really. Do you remember there was a tiger in the Mill Mountain Zoo?
Oh, yeah.
Ruby?
Yeah.
Ruby the Tiger.
A zoo that is not 2 miles from us, I don't think.
So, yeah, very close. And if you don't know anything about the Roanoke, Virginia, we're called the Star City because literally on top of the mountain, right next to downtown, is a gigantic star.
Yeah.
Like a huge lit star. So at night, as you're driving on the highway, like you'll see the star sitting up on top of the mountain. And that's like one of those things that I bet for people not from here, when they come, it's like, whoa, a star.
Cool thing.
How neat is that? And it's like, for us, it's like we literally driven past it
thousands of times
our whole life. But I remember literally when we were kids, we used to come and see our dad for dinner every Friday night. And like, as we would be like driving back to the town we lived in at the time, I would be like, as we were passing the star, I would always think about how the zoo is right up next to the star. And I was like, I would almost be like trying to like mentally communicate with Ruby the Tiger.
I'd be like,
oh, Ruby's up there just walking around. Like there's a tiger on that mountain right now.
There is a tiger right there.
Yeah. Like, and it
exists.
It was something that like, it was like, I could not separate the star from the tiger in my thoughts.
Yeah.
So it was like, every time I was looking at the star, I was thinking about Ruby the Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, yeah. So like, I would like look up at it and be like, I'm basically looking at a tiger right now.
Basically.
Yeah. So anyway, what a action-packed episode of The Pop this week. I feel like we've covered all sorts of stuff.
We have been all over the place.
We have
space, time, beyond, who knows?
A little bit of everything, yeah. People are like, I'm unsubbing. But we do want to give a very special thank you to the people who do support us over on Patreon. This week, we're going to give a special thanks to Xiomara Morales, Samuel Lager, Yolo Gano, I tried to look up the pronunciation on that, Yolo Gano. I think that might be more of like a username and not like a name, but I could be wrong.
It's not like Yolagano.
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. But it literally came up. I try to look up pronunciations of names so that I get it right. I don't always do that. I don't always get it right, that is.
Yeah.
But nothing came up for that one. Okay. So you have either an incredibly unique name, way to go, or it's a username. Ben Huff, Michael Blanchett, Andy, Maybell Boulahan, Connor Jenke, Elizabeth, Theoretical YouTube Channel, and Mastercraft 64. Thank you for all of your support over on Patreon. If you would like to support us on Patreon, you can do so by going to patreon.com/popcornculture. We have three tiers. They're all the same dollar figure. It's basically just casting your vote as to who is the one true host of the popcast here. Mm-hmm. And each week we release After the Final Pop, which is just an additional 15, 20 minutes of listening time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but otherwise, guys, until next week,
pop, pop.